Welcome back to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman.
Happy Friday, Brittany.
Happy Friday. We've been having a lot of fun today talking about a lot of different things. And right now we're going to travel out to the Illinois area here. And joining us, we have Eve Ripps. She's the Midwest Director of the Young Invincibles. Welcome, Eve.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on today.
You're welcome. And joining her, we also have Brenna Conway. She's the director for the Roosevelt Institute Campus Network. And together, they hosted this really awesome convention, the Next Gen Convention. And, you know, great things came out of it. Would you tell us a little bit more?
Sure thing. So last September, we hosted a convention for hundreds of young adults from across Illinois, aimed at sharing top ideas for political change in the state with each other and with both gubernatorial candidates.
Yes, we worked with several organizations throughout the city of Chicago and really the state of Illinois so that we could connect with local community groups, local labor groups, students on campuses, and meet young people really where they were, with the hopes of forming an Illinois youth-led policy agenda for our state in advance of the upcoming election.
That's awesome. I love that you guys got the youth involved, the millennials, and you guys got like 1,500 people, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, we had hundreds of young adults from across the state there on the ground.
That's great. You got those guys together. And what you guys kind of did with them is you made like a policy agenda of some things that are issues that affect millennials and stuff that they would like to see in the future happen in Illinois, correct?
That's right. So all summer we hosted caucuses with young adults from around the state aimed at generating new ideas for social change on 10 key topics. And at the convention, we then gave young adults in attendance the chance to talk with each other about those ideas and ultimately to vote on their ideas for a top policy platform for young adults.
What was really innovative about this project and really cool to see young people interact with is we talked about a lot of things that impact young people every day, things like education and jobs, especially youth employment. But we also connected those to what it means to vote and to be a part of our political process so that young people could offer ideas also on how to reform, say, our judicial system in Illinois or think about how we can make voting more appealing to young people.
Right, because you guys have a fairly low young voter turnout in Illinois, right?
That's exactly right. So in Illinois, in local elections in particular, young adults turn out at very low rates. We actually rank 47th in the nation in terms of how frequently young adults in the state vote in local elections.
One of the things that was clear to us is that it's not that young people don't care, it's just that they don't see the system as really something that is focusing on them or that they can make a difference in. And so by really talking about issues and allowing young people to talk about, you know, the policy solutions they think would best benefit them, we think that they'll be more interested. I know that as a young person, I'm now more interested caring about this election, voting, and things like that.
Yeah, I think by having this, you guys really did something awesome to get people, the millennials involved, and to really, I guess, grab their attention in a way that is interesting to them, would be of use to them, and make them feel like this has a purpose, and, you know, like, this actually does affect me. I can see now how it affects me, and I'm now more inclined to take part in the process and vote for someone who's interested in my best interest.
I think we heard that a lot from young people.
Good. And how did the candidates take this? Have you given them your list yet?
So we, at the convention, asked both candidates if they would take the time, if they were elected, to sit down for an hour with a group of young adults in attendance and talk about the platform we created together. So we're looking forward, after the election, to sitting down with whoever is our next governor and talking through our policy platform.
That's awesome. Can you guys highlight like some of the things you talked about? Because I know I'm looking at you have 10 ballot solutions to kind of some top issues on millennial minds here. A couple of the ones I thought were really interesting was fair elections, that to require candidates to receive funds from only Illinois residents and limit their contribution amounts.
I think that was a really interesting choice by everyone who attended that day, and it really speaks to the idea that young people are very aware of the influence in money in politics today, and they're not especially pleased with it. So they were really looking for a way that they could make political contribution, but just elections more meaningful and more based on the people who are going to be voting and the recipients of the policies that go in office. So I think it was really cool that they chose to focus on money in politics as one of the number one things we could do to make our elections better.
Yeah, I think it's great. Just in looking at some of these, just to highlight a couple of them here, you guys talked about raising the minimum wage to kind of be comparable with inflation, talking about you have a trauma center idea for victims of gun violence in the Chicago area, tax incentives for being more green. You guys talk about some education stuff, civil rights stuff, legislative stuff. You really hit a lot of big topics going across the board, and it's really great to see that the millennials came together and they talked about this stuff, and that you guys held basically a platform where this stuff can be discussed and debated and really look at, like, well, if we want to make this happen, how can we make this happen and what would we have to do?
Yeah, I think one of the coolest parts about our day was that when we talked about each one of those issues, we had young people. We had nearly 100 speakers that day, and they included high school and college students sitting on the same panel with experts in their field. So, you know, that's something that at the Roosevelt Institute we really value, is saying that young people can have great innovative ideas. We don't need to wait until, you know, we get our own PhD and things like that, which are valuable, but we can start working on those ideas now, and there's some value into listening to them.
That's great. And what I really like about this is that not only the involvement of, like, the younger generation here, but you're really getting these people to see that, you know, these are things that affect our future, and the candidates we elect and how they hold our personal interests will affect how we are in the future. And if we understand these things now, we would be better educated looking at the elections and how we vote and whatnot. But also, I think we'd be a little bit better off by just having a good knowledge of what is really affecting us. And though you may not think about it, a lot of these issues affect both young and old, not just older Americans.
We completely agree. We think that everything that the young adults in attendance voted on is something that affects their generation, certainly, but that affects young people across the board, or affects Illinois residents across the board as well.
One of the things that we also did through this project was connect young people in the Illinois area, in all of Illinois, with organizations who are doing great work on a lot of these topics already, with that same thing in mind, knowing that, you know, just because I hadn't previously thought or sat down and thought too much about, you know, what I would like to see in terms of reforming campaign finance, doesn't mean that now that I know it, there isn't a great organization out there who is already working on it, fighting for people at all levels, not just millennials, that I can now plug into and work with.
And I think that's a great message of collaboration across generations. You know, young people can have good ideas, and we can take from the research that's been done by people who've been in their field for a long time, and collaborating that way can really bring things together in a more meaningful way, I think.
Yeah, we're hoping to agree.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your civic innovation. That was one of the bullets on your list that I thought was really interesting. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So this was something that was really exciting to have young people talk about. And when we talked to young people across the state of Illinois about it, we framed it in terms of what are some new ways that we can interact with our government. Things like new things in technology and that better connect us, make it so that we can do more with our government than just vote and pay taxes. We can weigh in on more decisions. We can create new systems that allow us to have more information about, you know, what our government is doing, but also information to help us improve our communities and our lives. And so we asked young people, what are some changes that you would see? How would you use technology to make those changes? I got some really creative answers that could improve schools and communities and planning and everything else. So that was a really fun topic for us. It was very creative to see what young people across the state came up with.
And this is all really awesome, and I'm really excited to see how well this goes in the implementation here in the future, and I'd really like to see it expand. But real quick before we go, we've got about a minute or so left. First, Eve, tell us how we can find out more about the Young Invincibles.
Absolutely. We have a website, which is younginvincible.org. We are Together Invincible on Facebook, and we are at Young Invincible on Twitter. And all of those will provide more information. We are a nationwide nonprofit that works to empower young adults on key political conversations and to expand economic opportunity for 18 to 34-year-olds.
And then, Brenna, tell us how we can find out more about the Roosevelt Institute on Campus Network.
Absolutely. So we are a nationwide organization with chapters on college campuses all across the country. So look for one on your college campus. If there isn't one there, we'd love to help you start one. You can learn more about us online at RooseveltCampusNetwork.org. We're on Twitter at Viva Roosevelt. And you can see us in publications talking about sort of progressive policy, student-led policy all across the country. We'd love to have you join us.
Awesome. This has been great, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. That was Eve Rip. She is the Midwest Director of the Young Invincibles, and Brenna Conway, the Director for the Roosevelt Institute Campus Network. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman, and you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
Members of the American Postal Workers Union handle more than 165 billion letters and packages a year. That's about 34 million pounds of mail every day. Ever wonder what this costs you as a taxpayer? Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions? Not a single cent. The United States Postal Service doesn't run on your tax dollars. It's funded solely by stamps and postage. Brought to you by the men and women of the American Postal Workers Union.
When Dad needed help getting around, I became his driver. Soon enough, it was up to me to be his housekeeper and financial manager, too. When he moved in, I became his cook and even his nurse. But no matter what roles I play, I know I'm still his daughter.
We understand the roles you play. So to help, we created aarp.org/caregiving, where you can connect with experts and other caregivers. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Imagine me, a dog, moving in with a human. I didn't know how it would work. Turns out, my human's pretty entertaining. For instance, every time I give my human his ball, he throws it as far as he can. And I'm like, dude, that's your ball. So I go get it, but he just throws it. Again! I gotta say, though, the more he does it, the funnier it is. I love my human.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman.
Hello, Brittany.
We are having fun today, and to help us join in this fun right now, we have with us Deb Klein of the Cleveland Jobs with Justice. Hey, Deb.
Good afternoon.
Hey, welcome
great
to the fun.
Here.
Yeah, we love this time, you know, girl time every Friday.
It's always great.
So, I understand, we talked a little offline here, you guys have some interesting developments in your voting process going on right now in Ohio. I know right now, just across the country, everyone's got different things happening. We're coming up on the election, new rules, some changes, and just making sure everyone is savvy with how you got to vote, how do you go out and get registered, what's the protocol, where do you got to go, what days can you go, what times can you go, and, you know, it's important because of everybody does it different.
Well, that's right. I think people need to really make sure that they know what their process is in their own states. And here in Ohio, we've been in a court battle. It seems like a long continuing court battle. It was in the federal court, and then it just went to the Supreme Court. We were all geared up to do early voting starting on September 30th, I believe, and we were going to have. Notice how I'm saying we were going to have what we called Golden Week, where people could go in and register to vote and actually early vote at the same time. Well, the Supreme Court overturned the federal court decision, which took away our Golden Week and stopped the early voting from starting early on September 30th, because our Secretary of State disagreed with what we used to have for early voting. We used to have two Sundays before Election Day where the boards of elections were open so that the churches would do something called soul to the polls and they would take voters in. Our Secretary of State is saying that it's unfair because not all of the boards of elections will be open, and he thinks that it should be more uniform across the state, which I don't understand the logic behind it. If a board of election chooses not to be open, they just choose not to be open in some of the more rural counties. But when you have a big metropolitan county like Cuyahoga County, where we had really long lines and people were frustrated and they couldn't get in to vote, that was why we were pushing for longer hours and early voting. So right now we only have the polls will only be open for early voting on one Sunday. That's the last Sunday before the election, and only two Saturdays, and only have extended hours the last week before the election. So basically, it's just keeping people from the polls and being able to exercise, or from the Board of Election to go down and vote early and being able to exercise the right. Now, we do have, they can request a ballot and have the ballot be sent to their homes and vote at home, but you know, some people don't like to do that. They would sooner go down to the Board of Election and vote in person. So,
if they're worried about consistency, do you have any idea why they're not extending those other hours rather than cutting the ones that exist to make things more convenient?
Well, it's just because not all the counties in the state took the advantage of being able to be open the extra hours, because, well, if you're in a rural county where you have a very small population, they just didn't see the need to be open the extra hours, so they didn't do it. So because they didn't do it, the Secretary of State didn't think it was right for other counties to do it. So he wanted to keep the voting times uniform throughout the state. That was the reasoning behind it.
I mean, I guess I understand you're trying to maybe cut back on some confusion, but at the same time, I don't know. I kind of feel like you should put the greater need where you have the greater need. So you should extend the hours and make it more accessible and easier for places that have a lot of people, because of, you know, right, there's going to be a higher voter turnout and you're going to come across more issues by having a congestion of people, as opposed to a place that is more rural, does not have as many people. So they wouldn't necessarily have that need for these super extended hours or things like that, compared to somewhere like Cleveland or another area that's a lot more people compared to somewhere that's rural.
Right, and we do have some very rural counties in the state where the population is sparse. So, you know, if they didn't want to open up their polls on the weekends, or then they should have had that, then don't open your polls. But if we have three major metropolitan counties in the state, which is it's Cuyahoga, which is Cleveland, Franklin, which is Columbus, and then Hamilton, which is Cincinnati. So in those counties, it makes sense to have the extended hours so that you can avoid the long lines on Election Day. But for the sake of uniformity, that's why the extended hours, we aren't going to have the extended hours on the weekends.
That just seems silly. And I don't see why it would be so difficult to put out some kind of countywide information. This is when the polls are open. That seems pretty easy and reasonable to me. Put it on the nightly news. I mean, put it on the internet, put it everywhere, put billboards up, whatever. And I understand that they, I guess, are trying to prevent someone. If someone in a rural place thought that they could go vote later and the poll was already closed, then that would inhibit their vote. But by the same turn, whenever the lines are too long and not everyone can get through in the cities, then that inhibits those people's votes. So if you're really that worried about it, I would say just force the places that don't need it to stay open longer, and then everyone gets their voice.
And I totally agree. And a lot of, you know, you hear both sides of the issue. Well, this is to prevent voter fraud, but my personal feeling is it's suppression. It's voter suppression because it prevents, as I said, it prevents the big push on the Sundays where the churches did souls to the polls, where they could actually take people to the polling locations. Or to the Board of Elections, and people that may not have an opportunity to get out on Election Day, or for whatever reason do not want to do a ballot by mail early voting. A lot of people are just still not comfortable with voting by mail as much as people have been pushing it. Different organizations have been pushing it, and there's just a lot of people. I know a lot of seniors aren't comfortable with doing it. So for whatever reason, if they're not comfortable with doing an early ballot by mail and they would rather do it in person, they're given that opportunity and by going down to the Board of Election. But for whatever reason, our Secretary of State just feels that it's not right for Cuyahoga County to be able to do it and have the polls open when a place like maybe Meigs County, which is a very rural county, won't open the polls on the weekends. It just doesn't make sense.
That really doesn't make sense.
I know in the last week, Bernie Sanders just released a report. He went to the GAO and had them do a study, and of course they came out, and I'm saying of course because we've all known it all along, because every time anyone asks, show us the voter fraud, where has the voter fraud happened? No one can ever really pinpoint and say, here's where it's happened. The GAO came out with a report and said that it's not actually voter fraud. When the states passed the voter ID laws, it's not to stop voter fraud or prevent voter fraud. It's actually what is happening. It's actually causing voter suppression. And in the states, there are 17 states that have some type of voter ID laws. Voter turnout is actually dropped by 2-3%.
And I could see that. I know recently, I just literally think it was like yesterday, I was reading an article that someone had posted on Facebook from the New York Times, and they were talking about in Texas, they were trying to push through new voter ID laws. I just kind of skimmed real quick, so I didn't really see how it went, but I know it's going up through some court systems to their Supreme Court, I believe. And also this week we talked with the Wisconsin League of Women Voters, and they were telling us about how they had a new voter ID rule enacted this year. It went through, but their Supreme Court pulled it back for this election, saying that there's not enough time to properly educate and get the word out and make people understand this is what you now have to do and have voter ID. And also it won't give those same people enough time to get the proper ID they would need to vote. So just for this election, they held it off. But even still, I mean, that was a move in the right direction for holding that off for the election, if you have to do it at all. But yeah, there's just a lot of this going on. And I mean, they're making it very confusing for a lot of people who might not necessarily understand everything that they have to do, and putting all these new rules and things in to confuse people.
Well, I remember when we had the voter ID laws here in Ohio, when they went into place here in Ohio, it was back when I was working for an organization where we actually had C4, when we could do electoral work. But I was in the car and I was going across town to go work at a polling place, and I was listening to the radio, because when you're doing that kind of work, you're always listening to what's going on and what's happening. And I was listening to a so-called election official on the radio telling people what they needed to do when they showed up at the polls, and she was giving them all the wrong information. And I'm like sitting in the car screaming at the radio, because here is the so-called expert telling everyone incorrect information.
And I could see you doing that. And it's our responsibility to properly educate people. And you know what? We've got a couple more weeks before the election that we can talk about this and make sure people get the correct information, know where to find that information, and know what to do to prepare themselves leading into November.
Right. And luckily, you know, at that time I was able to call, you know, because when you're doing the grunt work, when you're doing that kind of work during election day, you know, I was calling the higher-ups, getting on the phone, going into letting them know so that we could get the word out, you know, to let people know, you know, there's always the chain of command when you're doing that kind of work. So, you know, but I couldn't believe it. So here is a so-called election official that's supposed to be educating the public that works for the system that didn't even know the proper information. So it's when you switch over and start using, and they start requiring ID when they do that in the state, it's a fiasco when they first start doing it.
And we're going to have to talk about this more next week, Deb, because we're coming up to the end of it and we've got to run. But thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, and thanks for having me.
All right, that was Deb Klein with Cleveland Jobs Justice. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman, and you've been listening to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
While college and university tuitions go up and up, higher education administrators have been spending less on students' education. Today, only a quarter of higher ed faculty has secure full-time jobs. The rest are so-called adjunct faculty, hired on a per-course temporary basis, often with no benefits, and are paid just $2,700 on average per course. Dedicated adjunct faculty across the country are joining together and fighting back in defense of their students' future. In Pittsburgh, they have formed the Adjunct Faculty Association, affiliated with United Steelworkers Union. Adjuncts and students all over the city are joining the AFA to achieve the goal of providing high-quality, affordable higher education. To know more or to support Pittsburgh's adjunct faculty, give us a call at 412-562-6967 or find us on the web at usw.org. Again, that's 412-562-6967 or usw.org. Together, we can take higher education back.